This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We turn now to our weekly review of politics and government. In a little while, we'll hear about how Illinois students are doing based on the latest statewide report card from Illinois education officials. But first, Illinois U.S. Senator Dick Durbin made news yesterday by calling for a ceasefire in Gaza. He was clear, however, and this is a point a lot of headlines have glossed over, that his call was only if the terrorist organization Hamas released the 240 hostages it seized in the October 7th massacre in Israel. Here he is speaking about this with Poppy Harlow on CNN.
2 years ago, 2021, during an escalation of violence between Israel and Gaza, you called for a ceasefire and you said you, quote, couldn't disagree more with Netanyahu's policies, quote, when it came to the treatment of Palestinians. Is a ceasefire needed now?
I think it is, at least in the context of both sides agreeing. For example, the release of those who have been kidnapped should be part of this. Immediate release, that should be the beginning of it. An effort should be made to engage in conversation between the Israelis and the Palestinians. Let's face it, this has gone on for decades. Whatever the rationale from the beginning, it has now reached an intolerable level. We need to have a resolution in the Middle East that gives some promise for the future.
Durbin's comments set him apart from a number of other left-wing Democrats who've called for a ceasefire without mentioning the hostages. And Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu echoed that condition in a statement this morning, saying Israel won't consider a temporary ceasefire unless the hostages are released. Meanwhile, this week also saw the U.S. House getting back to business after electing new Speaker Mike Johnson the previous week. Joining us now to help make sense of what's been happening in Washington is Linda Kenyon, who covers D.C. and our home state congressional delegation for Illinois Public Media. Linda, thanks for being with us, as always.
Well, thank you, Brian. Happy to be here.
Listeners, as ever, again, we move fast, but 800-222-9455 if you want to get in on today's conversation. 800-222-9455. All right, Linda, we heard that clip of Senator Durbin. He's been getting a lot of attention for that. He is a member of Senate leadership. Do you get the sense this signals a significant change in how the Congress has been responding to the Israeli war with Hamas in Gaza?
Well, I think one of the points that Durbin was making was that he said this has become an intolerable situation and that something has to be done not only to end this bloodshed, but also to pave the way for a future, that the current situation with the Israelis and the Palestinians fighting for so long is just not sustainable. Now, the issue, however, gets more complex because President Biden does not want a ceasefire. He's been very careful about that. He has said, and his military advisors have said, that a ceasefire would only be advantageous to Hamas. It would give Hamas more time to reload, to reposition, and to further its attacks once the ceasefire is over. Instead, President Biden has said he wants a pause. Now, a pause would be a very local situation, which would be negotiated under very specific circumstances and only for a very limited period of time, maybe just a matter of hours, in order to get the hostages and the civilians in the Gaza Strip out who want to go out and to get humanitarian aid in. So they're saying pause, not ceasefire.
And the president has been very careful to talk not just about his support for Israel, but also express his concern for the humanitarian situation in Gaza and talk about aid. I mentioned the House was back to work this week, and one of the items legislators took up there was financial support for Israel. But they did leave out aid for Gaza, which the president had called for. Also, support for Ukraine. Both of those items, the Democrats have said, are essential for a full deal. What are House Republicans saying about why they decided not to even try to meet the Democrats on where they think the priority should be for this spending bill?
Well, Speaker Mike Johnson says it's a matter of fiscal responsibility. He said that in order to pass aid to Israel and to leave out, by the way, the aid to Ukraine and the other issues that President Biden requested, including aid to the Indo-Pacific region and to border security, he said that it's a matter of fiscal responsibility and that money has to be offset. So he's cutting the exact amount proposing, by the way, for the Israel aid from the IRS budget. He says that it is because there's a pile of money there that was approved, that is law, that was approved to hire more IRS agents to collect back taxes, to go after scoff laws, if you will. And he says that money is sitting there right now. Of course, that money is meant for a specific purpose, but he says it just seems logical to take that money back. Well, the Congressional Budget Office says that would have the opposite effect of fiscal responsibility. In fact, it would add to the deficit because it would not be collecting taxes that are outstanding. So the other issue, of course, is that this was an emergency national security budget request, and emergencies have never required that the spending be offset. And this is exactly what Mike Johnson is doing. And of course, the Democrats are saying it's all political because the Republicans were very much against adding more money to the IRS budget in order to collect back taxes.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that point. The CBO number actually was $12.5 billion over the next decade, because, as you pointed out, a smaller IRS is less likely to be able to catch people who are cheating on their taxes. What kind of response have we seen to all of this from Democrats?
Democrats are pretty steamed about it. They say that there has never been a situation where there has been the requirement to meet certain conditions before there would be spending approved for national security reasons. They're very steamed about the fact that Ukraine was not included in the bill, very steamed about the fact that there was not border security in the bill when the Republicans continue to blast Democrats and the Biden administration in particular for not taking the border security issue more seriously. And the president is saying he's trying to, but Congress keeps blocking him from doing so. And of course, offsetting the IRS is a very dangerous precedent, they say. We have Illinois Representative Brad Schneider, for example. He voted against this aid to Israel bill. He said never in his life did he think he would be voting against Israel. But he said it's not about that. He said he cannot be voting against an aid package, and most importantly, an ally in the Middle East and maybe in the world, saying because this bill was terribly flawed, that it was weak and it was dangerous.
Well, we are almost out of our time together. I do want to ask you about just what other business, now that the House is, you know, they spent these 3 weeks where Republicans were casting about for who would be the next Speaker of the House. There's still this looming federal budget deadline out there in a few weeks, couple weeks. The Farm Bill, we talked about that on our program yesterday. Has there been any movement on those issues?
There has been some movement on spending bills, but the spending bills are very different that are going to be coming out of the House than the Senate versions, which means that there's going to have to be a conference committee for each of these individual bills to work out the differences between the two. That essentially means delay. And delay means that there will not be enough time to finish all of the appropriations bills by November 17th, the deadline for when the federal government runs out of money. So it looks like there's going to be another temporary spending bill, or as they call it, a continuing resolution.
Well, we will continue to talk with you, I hope, Linda Kenyon, in the weeks ahead. Linda Kenyon covers the federal government and politics for Illinois Public Media. Thanks, as always, for being with us. Have a good weekend.
Thank you.
And we turn now to state government. And this week, we're going to focus on education. The Illinois State Board of Ed released its annual statewide report card. It showed students are still recovering from the disruptions of the COVID-19 pandemic, making some gains there, that more students are taking advanced courses, and more students are graduating from high school. But it also says that chronic absenteeism remains a problem. There was an excellent write-up of all this by Samantha Smiley, a reporter for Chalkbeat Chicago, the education-focused news service. And Samantha joins us now. Welcome back to the 21st Show. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me again.
So let's start with that pandemic learning loss and the recovery from that. Talk about where are Illinois students now that we are, what, three, almost 4 years out of the pandemic?
Yeah, can you believe it? Time has kind of went pretty fast.
And it sure has, yeah.
The test scores from the report card, and in this case, I'm speaking about the Illinois Assessment of Readiness, which is an exam that is taken by public school students who are in third to eighth grade, and they are tested on reading and math. And there has been some recovery. However, the scores are not at the pre-pandemic level or where they were in 2019. And then what is really shocking, or maybe not shocking to some people, is that there's been little to no gains in math for students. And that seems like that's still a problem for a lot of students to catch up on.
Do you see differences across the state in, I don't know if the report gets into this level of detail of like where students maybe were back in school earlier or other schools that stayed, you know, remote for longer? I mean, or what did the board get into any of the sort of nitty gritty of those differences?
Yeah, well, they mostly look at the differences between like race and ethnicity, and in some cases, different student groups, such as students who are low income or, you know, free or reduced lunch, students experiencing homelessness, things like that. And so what they found in the report card is that Black students are still struggling to kind of catch up when it comes to like English and math. And in many cases, a lot of Black students didn't have the opportunity to go back to school earlier because in many cases, their communities were still very, very scared that COVID was still gonna be a problem for them. And so sometimes they Black students did not have the ability to go back into classrooms.
Interesting. Yeah. What about enrollment trends? That's something else that this was looked at in this report. What are we seeing in terms of enrollment in Illinois schools?
Yeah. So in 2020-2021 school year, we saw a really big drop. But since then, the decreases in enrollment is pretty much the same. It has come back to its pre-pandemic level. And it's also just keeping up with birth rates at this time. I think as everybody probably knows that people are not having children, a lot of children now. And so like, there's just not a lot of students to enroll in schools. And so that is what we're seeing, but we're also seeing an increase in English language learners. And the state board said that they didn't have enough data to see if those were migrants coming from Central or South America, or if they were coming from Ukraine or Afghanistan.
Interesting. Yeah, possible refugee angle on this story, and that's something that, given the number of migrants who've been coming into Chicago, we may see only increase in the years ahead. What about absenteeism? That's something else that looked at the report. That seems like something else that may be experiencing some of the negative effects we saw begin during the pandemic.
Yeah, which is, you know, it shows that students aren't really engaged. So absenteeism, the definition of that is that students miss about 10% of the school year. And in Illinois, school districts are supposed to have 180 days. And so it's about 18 to 20 days. And that could be with or without a valid excuse. So even if you know, had a note from your doctor saying like, I missed school because of this, that still counts towards chronic absenteeism. And also like the new mental health days that students receive from the legislature, those also count as a part of the chronic absenteeism number. But what we're seeing is that it's still really high. And especially for Black, Latino, and Native American students. And so I think it's a question of how are school districts reaching back out to those families and finding ways to engage them and to see what's happening at their local schools.
Yeah. And I guess on a brighter note, maybe we can inject a little more optimism toward the end of our conversation here. We are seeing an increase in students taking advanced placement classes, right? Or at least, I don't know, are they specifically AP classes or just advanced classes?
Oh yeah, they kind of use like advanced classes very broad. It can include advanced placement courses. It can include dual credit courses. It can include IB courses as well. And so yeah, the state is seeing an increase of students taking those classes, which is good because that's been a question around equity. What schools have those menu of classes? And so, yeah, they've seen an increase in that. And then also in other good news, like the 4-year graduation rate for high schoolers have increased.
That's interesting. Did the officials say what they see is behind that? Because that's something else that I imagine, you know, could have gone the wrong way because of the pandemic and some of the struggles that a lot of students had re-engaging with their education.
Yeah, and for the students who graduated in 2023, they were the students that started their freshman year in 2019, like very excited to go to high school. And then all of a sudden it was like,
nope,
what is
go
high
home.
School now? Yeah. Like, right, go home in March. Like, oh no, like, I'm, you know, high school is, like, what is my high school experience? But a lot of those students actually graduated. So that's a really good sign. And State Superintendent Tony Sanders has said that he believes the reason for some of these, like, for some of these really good things is because of the evidence-based funding formula. He was mostly speaking to the gains by Black and Latino students, though, and he was saying that he believes that because of the evidence-based funding formula, you know, giving money to schools based on their need, a lot of students of color have been able to, like, reap the benefits of that money.
Big picture, just about 30 seconds left. Are officials pleased? And I guess maybe the more to the point, should they be? Or is this, you know, putting a positive face on a situation where a lot of kids are still struggling?
Yeah, I think I would say that there's been good gains, but a lot more needs to be done in order to ensure that students are catching back up. And also we have to realize that a lot of really cool and interesting solutions to bridging this kind of achievement gap for students came from like ESSER funding that is set to expire September 2024. And so I think that, you know, we should, I mean, being cautious looking at next year, I don't know if we might see the same gains or not.
All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on it. Samantha Smiley is the state education reporter for Chalkbeat Chicago. Excellent overview. Thanks for sharing your reporting with us today.
Thank you.
More to come after a short break. This is the 21st show. We're going to be talking about pumpkin smashes. Stay with us.